Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad. Like to introduce you to Krishi Vachari. She's the Director of Innovation for the United States Postal Service, a cartoonist and innovation commentator at entrepreneurfail.com, which she co-founded. And she also has worked for PepsiCo as a senior marketing manager and Kraft Foods as a brand manager. Krishi, you are the first innovation cartoonist I've brought to the Everyday Innovators who are listening, and I'm glad you're here. This is a real treat for us.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You started your career in statistics and then somehow made your way to brand management. And I'm personally fond of statistics myself and have, you know, enjoyed that some as an engineering student and then have taught it some as a university teacher too. But what was your motivation for making that switch?
Sure. I used to say, you know, I used to do statistics for a living and then I started selling juice for a living and now I'm selling the mail for a living. So it definitely a huge different trajectory all the way around. But I started my career in technology and statistics because I really loved that investigative process. I loved digging through to find examples and evidence for actionable decision-making. That was really exciting to me. And a few years working in roles in which I was able to do that, I actually got enamored by the customer and the client side of everything and figuring out how to best present those statistics in a compelling way to really to get customers and clients excited. And so that's what led me to pursue my MBA and then to go deeper into marketing roles. So post-MBA is when I kind of delved into marketing and brand management for the first time. And after about 6 years doing that, I identified a really good opportunity to branch out on my own and provide some of the foundation, the foundational and processes that we took for granted in a large company and bring them to provide consulting for smaller or medium-sized businesses. Go ahead.
So along this way, just before we get too far down the path, so that change from statistics into brand management, went back into the MBA to help facilitate that. Were you able to find that actually the statistics background helped you any with the brand management and the product management?
Yes, of course. Because of that quantitative and strategic mindset that is so helpful in any type of brand management role and marketing management role in when you're running your own business or when you're driving innovation. So that's that foundation I'm really glad that I have because I probably couldn't do a lot of the stuff I can do today if I hadn't done that.
And there does seem to be a trend, especially in more technical product management, technical products like software, where the statistical aspect has kind of renewed. It's become very popular to have data-driven decisions and being able to have a product manager, brand manager that understands how to analyze the data is certainly a plus.
Yep. Big data has made statistics sexy again, and let's see what happens next.
Absolutely. So I interrupted you there. You were at Kraft Foods doing work as in brand management and then
at Pepsi, working in global marketing and international marketing roles. And after that, I identified an opportunity to leverage some of those processes and skills and foundation that I got from marketing at larger companies and working with smaller companies to provide that kind of structure. And after a couple of years of doing that and also launching the comic strip, that's when I found this exciting role at the Postal Service. So that's kind of been my trajectory. So it's it's been an interesting, interesting journey for sure.
Absolutely. So let's focus on those corporate sort of positions first, and then we'll dive into some of your entrepreneurial experiences. So between Kraft Foods and PepsiCo and USPS, where have you been where you have felt that you've learned the most about product innovation?
Interestingly enough, I learned the most about product innovation during my entrepreneurial experiences, my startup experiences, but I can share some of the interesting insights and takeaways I got from the larger companies.
Okay. Maybe there's a good example there, one of them, that something that you've learned that would be really applicable to product managers and help them improve the job they're doing right now.
Absolutely. So while I was at Kraft, I was managing Tang, the orange powder, which the astronauts made famous. And it was a huge brand earlier in the century, but it started declining after health and wellness trends took over, and Tang was not as big a product as it used to be. So when I took it over, it had gone through a bunch of reformulations, and we dug into the data, and we identified that the sugar and the artificial sweetener trend did not really apply to Tang diehards. Tang consumers, they loved the sugar. They loved the taste of that original Tang. And all of the reformulations which were done for whether it was cost-cutting measures or whether it was for if it was just to keep up with the trend of artificial sweeteners in beverages like that, it wasn't working. And so it was a lot of insights and data and really going deep into the consumer psychology of that target market that we understood that we needed to reformulate back to the original Tang that people knew and loved and remembered. And so that was my first kind of foray into really deep consumer insight and development to attain that goal. And kind of the lesson from there is that everything has a time and a place. And perhaps later on in the future of Tang, artificial sweeteners may work. Perhaps in the history of Tang, a different formulation or a different packaging may work better. But you just have to identify what works for your consumer at that time, and that's what you have to execute on.
Absolutely. Watching those trends and recognizing a trend growing or decreasing is so important. And I unfortunately am a bit of a recovering Mountain Dew drinker. And I say unfortunately because I know it's probably really not that good for me and certainly not my overall health and fitness level. But they did a similar thing with Mountain Dew. They have the throwback all sugar version, right? And I actually like that better than the other one. Yeah. And when you were digging into Tang, what was the catalyst there to recognize that trend in the data? Or I don't know if it was customer interviews or how did that come about?
It was a lot of survey data, a lot of research that was done, a little bit of ethnographies and ethnographic data that we dove into their psychology to understand why they were even consuming it. Why did they decrease if they fell off the bandwagon, if they fell out the franchise? What really happened? And so I think that was so crucial and critical, and that finding those gems of insights were the catalyst to go forward and make the change.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you were involved in this part or not, but do you know how the actual data was collected, how you identified people that left the brand?
So we partner with a consumer insights agency that actually tracks users of our product of the Kraft products, and we were able to identify by kind of longitudinally what they were doing and what they weren't doing as they were reporting that information.
Okay. Yeah. And so the results of that survey was that data that helped you identify that there's an opportunity here to move back to real sugar and regrow a base of users.
Yep. Yep. And then something else that really stuck with me from my time at Kraft is that this is something that one of the senior leaders had said there, and I've always taken it to heart when it comes to driving innovation or new products. There was a senior leader there who said that for 20 years, Kraft Foods had been trying to commercialize single serve powdered beverages. So you know the little sachets of Crystal Light or Tang or the little single serve sachets that that have gotten more ubiquitous lately. For 20 years, they were trying to make the economics work. They were trying to identify the demand. And there was just never enough demand. People felt it was a good idea. And time and time again, it was just shut down. It was shut down. It was shut down. Until the early 2000s, when bottled water started really having an uptick. And all of a sudden, the single-serve sachets had a place in the world because as people were on the go and they had their bottled water, they would take that sachet with them. Whereas before that, they didn't really see the benefit of having a glass of water. And if you're at home, why don't you just have a canister? And so that type of persistence and the fact that every idea has a time, it has a day, and you just, if you can wait long enough and be persistent long enough, you can identify what that is. And so that really stuck with me because often when you're driving any type of innovation, you're shut down left and right, and might not be right. But if you continue long enough and pursuing long enough, that all the stars will align and you can get to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a good reminder that so many times we look inside of organizations for new ideas, and they may already have been developed in a fairly coherent way and just got abandoned because it wasn't the right time for them, right? It's not that it wasn't not a good product. It was a not now sort of product. Yep. And recognizing the trends and how those things come back around. And there's a lot of mining that can be done from large organizations on past ideas that maybe the trend has changed.
Absolutely.
Great. Thanks for sharing that one with us. On the commercial side, is there any other stories that really stand out as a learning experience from you?
Yeah. While I was at Pepsi, I pursued one innovation. It was actually a supply chain innovation. It was streamlining a way to actually ship products internationally. I was working on Gatorade at the time, and Gatorade is used by athletes around the world. So for example, Serena Williams and Usain Bolt, they're both Gatorade athletes. And if Serena's competing in Australia, she wants her Gatorade. If she's competing in China, she wants her Gatorade. She wants the flavor she wants, and she wants what she's used to. And for us to actually get the product and ship it to these different countries, often in a very quick turnaround timeline, it was quite challenging. So I led an initiative to kind of alter some of the supply chain to make that process of really quick, small shipments fast and easy and turnkey. And it was quite challenging. And for quite a bit of time, it felt like it was going nowhere. It felt like that project was not going to go to the next level. But what the unlock really was when I started working with the cross-functional teams, not as folks who were gonna who were going to help make this happen, but actually got them really vested into the whole process, got them excited about Serena Williams and Usain Bolt drinking these products that we send them, really got their buy-in and got their vested interest. And only then were they going over and beyond their day job to help make this happen. And eventually we did end up creating a process that cut that time by a significant amount, and we were able to ship close to $1 million of product to these athletes around the world, which earlier either it never reached or got stuck in customs or it there were some other issues. So that was a really great turning point, because I know that I have to engage and get buy-in from cross-functional teams, but this was the first time that I gave them that excitement, and they got they really took the project on as their own because they had such a vested interest in it.
And you could make athletes happy.
Yep.
So the cross-functional teams that you had involved, it sounds like that this project was originally probably seen as an annoyance to them because it fall into their normal day-to-day activities, their responsibilities.
Yep.
But you got them excited and bought into the idea of helping these athletes. What kind of things did you do to convey that?
So the folks in supply chain and the folks in R&D and the folks in even at the plant and they never get to see the fancy commercials or the advertising that goes out. That's really exciting stuff that's happening in the front end, but all the folks on the field and the back end, they may get to find out about it later on, but that's not really in their forefront. So I shared with them a lot of these inspirational videos that we had, some of the outtakes of some of the advertising that was being done, just gave them kind of the insider scoop. Something that they wouldn't have otherwise seen. And I think that really was really eye-opening to them and got them really excited and felt they were part of something bigger and part of this elite crowd that can really get involved with these athletes. So
created a motivating goal for them.
Yep.
So on those videos, then, did they get introduced to the actual athletes and see the customers that would be impacted if you could get the system put in place?
So did who get to see the athletes? Or did
the people involved on the cross-functional teams?
So they never actually met the athletes, but they did get to see a lot of the videos and, even sometimes newsreels from the different countries of you'll see Usain Bolt carrying a bottle of Gatorade and they'll say, wow, we actually got him that. We managed to ship that across the world to get them to him. So.
Great. I think that's a really powerful tool to use when you're working with developers, engineers, R&D, is to give them that customer experience in some form. And in your case, through the videos of seeing the difference the product made to the customer. To help generate that buy-in and why their work is actually important and how it makes a difference.
Yeah. So,
very good. You shared something that caught my attention earlier, which was the most valuable experience for learning about product management, product innovation, came from your entrepreneur activities. So yeah. You should tell us more about that.
Absolutely. So some years ago, I decided to take the plunge and I resigned from Pepsi to pursue my own startup and pursue entrepreneurial activities. And I must say, in retrospect, I was quite naive. I had three ideas. I thought I'd launch them all in a few weeks, a month. I thought I could do it all myself. I thought I could do it without funding. How much money could I possibly need? Whatever. And all without really getting that first customer. I think I spent maybe 6 months of that initially pursuing an app idea that I had, thinking, oh, I'd figure out how to do it. I'll work on the back end. And I was 6 months later, nothing had been done. The three ideas were all piecemeal, little bits of it. I hadn't validated again with customers because I was too busy doing, trying to learn how to code. I don't know what I was thinking. And so it was then that I took a step back and I had finally read The Lean Startup. I had gotten finally started to understand the concepts of iterative testing and learning before building instead of just building. And we're so large companies, small companies, building is usually the easiest part and it's the most tangible. And so we all love to just jump into that. But not enough is done in that fuzzy front end, which is the assessment, the analysis, the strategy, the minimally viable product, the confirming that this is exactly what a customer want, and then work with them step by step to determine what the features and functions would be. Those concepts in theory, I guess I knew them, especially working in a larger company. But when you're so close to the action in your own startup, in your own business, that's when you really understand that, wow, this I should not have been. I cannot waste a month coming up with a website that nobody's going to come to. That doesn't make sense. You have to have something that people, it's not if you build it, they will come. You have to actually have something compelling. That's the best marketing is actually a great product, not just fancy website or a feature filled app or anything else. So that's kind of my realization. And so in fact, kind of all those misadventures and those inspirations led me to create Entrepreneur Fail. And so that's how it all kind of all came together with me, because I started just doodling and documenting the mistakes I made as a new entrepreneur. And sure enough, it started resonating with other new entrepreneurs who said that they did the exact same thing. It's so easy to get caught up in too many ideas, to not have that focus, to think you can do it all yourself, to not validate enough each step with customers, not just the bigger picture, but validate each individual iteration with customers. And it's so easy to get caught up in all of that that rigmarole without actually bringing in a dollar.
Absolutely. I know I've gotten caught up more than once, I'm embarrassed to say, with doing the similar sort of thing, right? Which is, surely this is a great idea. People are going to value this idea. And I'll just start building the solution without doing that work to validate more seriously up front to make sure, do I have a customer that needs the solution? And do I have more than one customer that could need the solution? And what are we talking in terms of the value it provides to them that they're willing to pay for?
Yeah.
And working through that. I think it's more exciting for a lot of us innovators to dive into the building part and kind of bypass that until we learn the hard lesson. And it sounded like that was a pretty hard lesson for you. 6 months of time, no funding coming in for this, and trying to make life work.
Yep, absolutely. 6 months of time, no funding, no progress. I mean, I made minuscule or inching forward progress on all of the ideas, but that's not going to work. That's not going to help anyone. Once I came to that realization, I really decided to focus on one concept. I hired people as necessary. I actually dove deeper into the customer and the consumer, and so that whole process really set the tone for me and set the stage for product development. It just became so much clearer, even though I had done similar stuff at a larger company. It's just so different when you're doing it for yourself and there's so much at stake and on the line.
Yeah, it's sometimes we lose track that it's real money when you're doing it yourself. You know, it's still money you're responsible for in the larger organization, but if it's money that is the difference between you pursuing your business or keeping food on the table, it's really personal.
Yeah.
So what was that transition then? So when you got focused, what were you involved with?
So the focus was the the consulting that I was doing, providing innovation and ideation and design thinking consulting for small to medium-sized businesses. So that was everything from helping create an innovation pipeline to diving deeper into a competitive landscape to identify what products or services can outdo the competition, market sizing and assessing different various concepts, running workshops and events to help organizations identify what those next steps would be. And that I felt was something that it was the intersection of what I enjoyed, what I was passionate about, what there really was a need for, and what could propel my business to the next level.
Yeah, great combination. Looking for those things that you enjoy doing, people need, you add value, and you make money at it. Kind of that Jim Collins three-circle model he has for what should we do in life.
Yep.
I'm curious, when you started doing that, then how much of the experiences did you lean on that made those ideation events you were doing, did you lean on from your corporate experiences versus the prior 6 months of recognizing that you didn't validate the product ideas you had?
A little bit of both, because it was at Kraft that I had actually learned some of the techniques for generating ideas and assessing ideas. That was, and even in business school, I did some of that. So that's where I initially learned a lot of the topics, but applying lean startup methodologies, applying kind of iterative, the mindset of an iterative development, that I didn't really understand until I went down the path of working on something that did not make sense to work on those first 6 months of my entrepreneurial venture. So it was kind of, the next stage was kind of the conglomeration of my large company experience as well as my startup experience to date at that time.
So it turns out those 6 months actually provided quite a bit of value to what you ended up doing.
Absolutely.
Very good. And for the everyday innovators that are listening, back in episode 10, we dove into this aspect of lean and doing customer experiments more deeply with the author of the Running Lean book, Ash Mariah, and went through a lot of detail in how do you actually do validate a product concept. And so good reminder for everyone listening to check that out. Okay, so you got your feet wet in putting together your own startup, at least venturing into doing something on your own, and then leading to offering innovation, ideation services to companies. And in the process, you were doodling, and out came this entrepreneurfail.com website. Tell us more about that.
Absolutely. So as I mentioned, I made every mistake in the book, and I've always been a doodler, not really an artist, but always loved doodling. And so I just wanted to kind of capture the misadventures and the learnings I was going through. So I kind of just doodled it out, and humor kind of was one way that I kept propelling myself forward. You kind of have to laugh at yourself, and then you can go to the next level. So it was a way for me to kind of make fun of what I had done and then move on and learn from that. So I started doodling my experiences as an entrepreneur and the foolish things that I had done, and just very casually started sharing them. And the response was completely unexpected, because so many people started reaching out to me and saying that it resonated with them so much. They did the exact same thing. They love the perspective that it brings, because it's, you know, everyone is going through it. It's not just them. And you just kind of need that reassurance when you're in that startup rut, in that entrepreneurship vortex. And so this is how it kind of got started. Started off as just something I doodled for fun. And it almost started becoming a business development tool. And because it generated a lot of attention, it started generating a lot of emails and questions, and people were very interested to know a little bit more of the backstory, and it evolved into almost a tool for new entrepreneurs, a bite-size, easy to digest, quick lesson on some of the common mishaps in entrepreneurship. And it grew from there. And then soon thereafter, I published a book of cartoons comparing the hilarious differences between big companies and small companies. And I still continue drawing them today. My husband is also an entrepreneur. And so he and I both kind of generate the content together, and I create the illustrations, but the actual the story or the concept and the copy, we work on that together.
So you have someone to share the experiences with and discuss these headaches that you run into.
Absolutely. And he was an entrepreneur before I was. So when I started doodling them, it was, partially his encouragement, because he says, I've been there, I've done that, I know exactly. He said that captures, kind of that emotion and that mental state very well. And so that, then soon together, we were brainstorming a lot more ideas.
Mm-hmm. And that website where this is entrepreneurfail.com.
Yes, entrepreneurfail.com. And the joke is that there shouldn't be such a stigma on failure, because failure is kind of awesome and you can actually laugh at it. And it's so universal. It's almost a rite of passage. So join us and laugh and learn and launch while you're at it. So.
Absolutely. That's how we learn, right? Unfortunately, it's the painful experiences in life that we look back on and go, oh, that was really valuable, right? The happy-go-lucky ones we tend to take for granted, and we don't learn as much from them, I don't think. So that might be a shame, but we need some pain apparently in our lives. And you mentioned in the process you put together a publication to a book. Is that the cheating on your corporate job?
Yep. So that book was inspired by the fact many folks that I had met who were in corporate jobs, who were in large companies such as Kraft and Pepsi and other established organizations, they kept saying, oh, I just want to launch my own business. I just want to start my own thing. I just want to get out of here and start their own thing. But what they didn't realize is that each scenario and each situation, each organization has its own challenges. So whether you're working in a tiny company or a huge company, it's not going to be perfect. And there are so many things that in my startup experience, it made me appreciate what I had in a larger organization. We definitely take it for granted when we're in a larger company. And then in the smaller company, you take other things for granted. So it's kind of poking fun at that mindset and sharing the hilarious differences between those large companies and the smaller companies and things you wouldn't have even thought of as you're making that transition.
Sounds like great insights for people to read if they're thinking about making that jump. And I like the tagline on your site, which is laugh to launch.
Yep.
For Entrepreneur Fail. Great. The grass is always greener on the other side, isn't it?
Yeah, some folks say the grass is always brown, but hopefully we can be more optimistic than that.
Very good. So there's, in this audience of Everyday Innovators, there's certainly lots of people that have the same thoughts about, really good at coming up with new ideas, that know how to test those, validate them with customers, lead to something that's really valuable, and thinking about maybe making that jump and doing it on their own. This sounds like a good resource for people to go look at, laugh as they read through it, and think through what that might actually look like if they were to make that leap.
Absolutely.
Okay. So I just want to make sure we had the right persona, the right avatar, the right person in mind thinking about who should be looking at your site.
You got it.
Very good. And I'm just curious, did this start out initially as like a personal blog, or... Because you said you were kind of, just writing it for yourself and lessons you learned.
Yeah, I was actually doodling it. I started adding kind of a little paragraph or two as an explainer. But initially it just started off as doodles. I wasn't even sure if I wanted to publish it. I'm not an artist by any means. So it was, you know, a little bit intimidating to even want to share something that I drew. If you ever asked me if I would ever consider myself a cartoonist, if you asked me this 5 years ago, I would say you're crazy. But
well, you say that, but I do. They have a nice consistent style and I like the way they look.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It's definitely, I still prefer to say doodler than cartoonist. It seems a little bit more unofficial, but yeah, it didn't start off as a personal blog. It just kind of started off as a way for almost as an outlet, a creative outlet for me to kind of share my experiences with anyone who would listen.
It sounds like a form of journaling.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Which is another good takeaway for us, that going through the experience of developing a product inside an organization on your own, whatever the case may be, keeping track of the notes and having that journaling experience, and in your case, the doodling experience, is really valuable for our own reflection. And actually, that may end up being a product in itself in some point in the future.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's been so many times that I go back to it. So that's another thing, is the benefit of journaling or doodling or capturing your thoughts. You constantly have inspiration to go back to.
Yeah, there's new problems that arise. Excellent. Thank you so much for sharing that. And again, that's entrepreneurfail.com for people that want to go look at the comics. Doodles, as you say, but really nicely done comics with important messages for people thinking about making that leap to entrepreneurship and startups. I always like finishing up with my guests asking for a quote related to innovation, and I want to ask you for one and why you chose that.
Yeah, so I have a couple that I'm a fan of, but Mike, I'll share both of them, and then they're kind of related.
Sounds good.
One is a Hemingway quote, which is, "Never confuse motion with action." And that is so relevant because, as I shared in my entrepreneurial experiences and even in the past, so many times we're doing things for the sake of doing things because it feels like we're accomplishing things. But at the end of the day, if it's not bringing more customers or increasing your revenue or anything else like that, it's just motion. It's not action. So that has kind of signified a lot of things, because it's very easy to get into that, to fall into the trap of doing things and feeling busy, but not really accomplishing anything.
Yeah, that's a good reflection of your 6 months too, when you decided to take out on your own and confusing that motion for action. Yep.
Yeah. And then another one is those who fail to plan to fail. And ladders back up to entrepreneur fail. It's entrepreneur fail is almost a way for folks to plan in advance, be aware that these are the pitfalls, understand them in a really easy to understand manner, and accordingly be ready and be more prepared than they would have otherwise. So those are the two quotes they really stick with me.
Yeah, I appreciate that one too. Those who fail to plan to fail. And it almost seems at times in, you know, our agile development communities that taking time to plan is looked at as a not a good use of time, because plans indeed do change. But it's not so, I personally think it's not the plan that is as important as it is the process of planning, because that's where you learn so much.
Absolutely.
So that's a great quote. Thanks so much for sharing those with us. It's been great to talk with you. Is there anything that makes this an interview a win for you that you want to share with us? And also, I'm sure there's people that like to follow up and check out your cartoons. So share your contact information that you'd like to.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me on Twitter at Critter2Be. That's K as in King, R as in Ram, I as in Igloo, T as in Tom, E as in Elephant, R as in Ram, the number 2, and the letter B. And if you want to check out the comics, there are links to my email address there. So entrepreneurfail.com. If you'd like to email me, you can. And the comics themselves, they're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. So feel free to browse them. And if you have ideas for comics, that'll be great. Send them over. Any mishaps and misadventures that you've experienced in your startup careers, send them my way. But making this session a win would really be if anyone takes home the fact that innovation and entrepreneurship and driving change, it's not easy and it just takes a lot of time. And so if my comments today reiterated that anyway, I think it's a win, because it's a long haul process, but it's worth it at the end. So
excellent. Thank you so much. And I will also include that contact information, your Twitter handle and your website URL in the show notes for this episode. So for everyone listening, that will be there. And I do appreciate your time. And I also want to thank the everyday innovators who are listening. The reason why we do this weekly show is to help get more information out for product innovators, product managers, and developers. And without your listening, it would not happen. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training Your Customers Will Love You For. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.